We have some amazing law enforcement agencies protecting Arizona, and we value their daily service and sacrifice. The Law Matters Live Show was created to open the lines of communication between law enforcement and you. So get your questions ready, set your alarm for 8, dial into AM 1030 The Voice, and join the conversation. To learn more about Law Matters and support our 501c3 mission, go to lawmatters1030.org. Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or a total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900. We have some amazing law enforcement agencies protecting Arizona, and we value their daily service and sacrifice. The Law Matters Live Show was created to open the lines of communication between law enforcement and you. So get your questions ready, set your alarm for 8, dial into AM 1030 The Voice, and join the conversation. To learn more about Law Matters and support our 501c3 mission, go to lawmatters1030.org. Okay, we're back. And I have two guests today, Mark Barnes, who you should be familiar with. He's the owner of Copper Canyon Tax Service. And I have Wyatt McRae, who's a financial planner. And are you guys going to flip a coin to see who goes first?
I don't think so.
Okay, you talk first, so you go first. This is Mark Barnes.
Good morning, Tucson.
And they're on the phone, so, you know, that coin flip wouldn't have worked anyway.
No.
Okay, you're telling me there's new rules for IRA because of the coronavirus?
The government has been busy this year. In addition to just doling out cash at an unbelievable pace, they've created a bunch of new rules that cover a variety of topics. And they've made several changes, some of them fairly significant, to distributions from retirement plans. I think the important one is if you are or are you're about to receive a required minimum distribution, that has been suspended for 2020. And a required minimum distribution is something that happens when you are at 70 and a half years old, and this is money that is tied up in a 401k or an IRA, 403b, 457, and you didn't pay tax on the money already. So you've deferred income for your retirement, and at that age you're required to start taking money, and that's when the government wants to collect taxes. So for this year, suspended, no required minimum distributions need to be taken. If you need the money from your account, take it. This is for people that don't necessarily need the money and don't want to take a distribution from their account, which may be suffering performance-wise from the stock market performance we've had for the last few months. Also for retirement accounts, IRAs, there is a new exclusion to the 10% penalty. So if you're not at retirement age and you withdraw money from your retirement account, you are typically penalized, and that penalty is 10% plus its taxable income to you. So if you're in the 25% bracket, you're going to pay the 25% regular tax, but you'll also pay a 10% penalty. So it would cost you 35% to access your money. So for the 2020 year, we have an exception to the 10% early withdrawal penalty if you meet one of the following three requirements. You have been diagnosed with COVID-19 by a CDC-approved testing facility. Your spouse or dependent has been diagnosed with COVID-19. And those are the two easy ones. The third one's the complicated rule. Or you're someone who experiences adverse financial consequences as a result of being quarantined, furloughed, laid off, having work hours reduced, or being unable to work due to lack of child care due to COVID-19. So I'm not entirely sure how this is defined. And with all things new in the government world, we don't have forms, we don't have guidance, and we don't really have answers yet. So
Wow. This
is one of those things to keep in mind, that if you're not working and you're unable to collect unemployment and you have no other sources of income and you do have money sitting in an IRA, this is still taxable income. The only thing that's not going to happen is you will not pay the 10% penalty if it meets one of these three exceptions. This isn't a free pass. Pulling money out of your retirement account is almost always a terrible idea unless you're actually retired. So this isn't something to do just because. The cap on this is $100,000. So if you went out and pulled $250,000 out of your account, you're still going to be penalized on most of that money. This would be for distributions up to $100,000.
What is this RMD?
That's a required minimum distribution. That's the money that you have to start taking when you reach age 70 and a half.
Okay.
This is basically the government's giving you a pass for however long. Maybe you've been saving money for 50 years, you've been deferring it, and you haven't paid tax on this money yet. Age 70 and a half, age 72 now, under the new rules, is where the government's saying, hey, it's time for us to start collecting. We haven't been paid tax on this money for years, potentially decades, and now you have to start taking this money out.
Okay, what is this HSA rule?
HSA, so HSA is your health savings account. So if you have a high deductible health plan and you have a health savings account attached to that, this is the place where you're allowed to put money, goes into a bank savings account. You usually get a debit card from the provider, and this is what's used to pay your medical bills. And if you don't spend the money, that's okay, because it's your money and it's in your account and it stays with you forever. So you spend it on healthcare or withdraw it for other reasons. Under COVID-19, they're allowing for these health expenses to be covered. And this is going to include medical care and items purchased that are related to testing and treatment, vaccinations once available, and any preventative care that's directly related to COVID-19. And what this usually gets into is this complicated set of rules that you have to have this high deductible health plan. So there's requirements that normally have to be met before you can pay for stuff, before it counts towards your deductible, and eventually before your health insurance actually kicks in to pay anything. So this is just allowing for these upfront costs to be paid directly from your health savings account without it having to follow all these other specific rules in these types of accounts.
Well, that's actually kind of cool that, you know, they're bending it a little bit to help people.
Yes, and again, when you're looking at these rules are for the 2020 year, unless they're extended, but currently it's only this year. So if any of these things apply, step one, talk to somebody. Get some advice that's specific to your situation to make sure that you're doing what's necessary, that you're following the rules for whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish, and then take action. The worst thing that can happen is somebody strolls in my office or any other tax preparer's office next March, next April. Hey, I did this last year. I hope it's okay. Yeah, we don't have time machines, so if you mess something up, we probably aren't going to be able to help you in the way that you're hoping. You know, again, with the distributions, it's only the 10% penalty. If you went and pulled a huge chunk of money out of your IRA just because, that's still taxable income to you. And next year, we won't be able to undo that once you've already done it, because you have 60 days to put that money back in. And if you're in my office in March, even if you took it out December 31st, 60 days is gone.
Oh, wow. Let me ask you another question. I heard that stimulus checks have been sent out to dead people, and people are cashing these checks. Number, my first thing that entered my head was, you know, isn't that like a felony? What happens with these checks?
So this is an interesting area, and this has been talked about a lot. And this is another area where there's no guidance released, but this is my position as of this morning at 8:27 a.m. In the CARES Act, it specifically says that estates and trusts are not eligible to receive a stimulus payment. The second that you pass away, you're no longer a person as far as the tax code goes. Any money that's received after that is income in respect of the decedent and goes on an estate tax return. So this is an item now that it's not necessarily income, but it is something that would need to be reflected on the estate tax return. And there will not be an opportunity to qualify and claim a stimulus payment on this estate tax return.
Okay.
Now, is the IRS going to come out and say that there's some leniency or there's a certain time frame? Like, I've had three clients pass away this year. So
what are you doing to them?
Nothing. Wish I was giving them some CPR or something. It's horrible when my phone rings and that's the phone call. It really is. We have a fairly small practice. And, you know, we're not churning out thousands of tax returns. I know my clients. I know their families. I know the children. So every one of those phone calls, it's really somebody that I know, and I know a lot about them, and I know their history, and it hurts. It really does hurt. So I'm not entirely sure what we're going to do with this, but my position is if someone passed away, especially if it's somebody that passed away a long time ago, last year, example.
Yeah.
I don't know that you're going to want to keep that money. You're probably going to want to send it back. I don't know what the consequences will be. Maybe nothing.
We'll have to ask Brian.
And it depends on what the legal team at the IRS decides. They'll decide on a course of action. They'll issue guidance at some stage on what their intentions are. And, you know, if you really need the $1,200, roll the dice. If you don't really need the money, if it's not going to be life-changing to you, I don't know that I would toy around with the IRS coming after you later or assessing taxes against you in the future.
And some of them carry guns.
And some of them do.
Special agents.
The guys that you don't want at your doorstep.
Okay, that's good advice. I think integrity-wise, you should just return the money.
So, Sherry,
and I know it's one of those tough things.
Mark and Sherry, I had a client that passed away on May 3rd, and she was receiving Social Security checks, and the Social Security Department said, hey, because she died on May 3rd, the check for May 1st, or the check for May is still good. So
they didn't have to return it?
No, because if you die in that month, whether it's the 1st or the 30th, You keep that check.
I didn't know that. I thought you had to return it.
Mm-mm. No.
Is that a state thing or is that a national thing? Because
that's just a recent example I just went through this past week with a client and their estate.
And that's Wyatt McCray on the phone, by the way. Just thought I'd let people know who's talking. We need to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. We have some amazing law enforcement agencies protecting Arizona, and we value their daily service and sacrifice. The Law Matters Live show was created to open the lines of communication between law enforcement and you. So get your questions ready, set your alarm for 8, dial into AM 1030 The Voice, and join the conversation. To learn more about Law Matters and support our 501c3 mission, go to lawmatters1030.org.
The FBI says the fastest-growing financial crime in the United States targets some of society's most vulnerable citizens, children and the elderly. It's called synthetic identity theft, and it differs from traditional ID theft because criminals don't steal an identity, they create one using a combination of real and fake information. When they use that identity to apply for credit, a new credit file is generated. The fraud is difficult to detect, so to help prevent your child's Social Security number from being used as part of a synthetic ID, the FBI's Jill Adams suggests checking their credit reports and...
Parents can request that credit bureaus freeze their children's credit.
Supervisory Special Agent Zachariah Baldwin.
The other thing they can do is have their children signed on as an authorized user for their credit profile. They don't actually have access to the card to make purchases, but they're linked to their accounts. This is often done to build their credit.
With FBI This Week, I'm Molly Halpern of the Bureau.
Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900. Thanks for staying with us on the phone. We have Mark Barnes and Wyatt McCray, and they're trying to guide us through some of the new rules and changes that have taken place since the coronavirus. Wyatt, can you hear me? Wyatt?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Maybe my headset wasn't working, so I'll just talk right into the receiver.
There you go. Okay. Walk us through some of the things that people need to be concerned with and some things that maybe you can alleviate their anxiety on.
Yeah. You know, first of all, what Mark said, I concur with everything that he said about RMDs and the HSA. He gives really good advice, and I've had many discussions with him regarding many tax issues and things of that nature there. Right now, we have gone through a wonderful, volatile market turmoil, right? In the month of March, amid the emerging national quarantine and the uncertainty that we had with the virus, the market pulled back, had a record pullback in the Dow Jones, followed by April, which kind of quickly came up about halfway and recovered. Recovered halfway there. So what we're looking at right now is there's a lot of uncertainty, and people are wondering, you know, we've had a market pullback, a market recession here. How long will it take to recover? And I think that's a lot on people's minds at the moment.
So what do they do with their portfolio if they have one? What do they do? What do you recommend?
Well, right now, what they need to do is to first and foremost is not panic. Be optimistic but realistic on what they should be doing. Be talking to professionals, advisors that can lead and guide them through this bear market time, this market pullback. And to make sure that they are taking a look at maybe some risks that they are taking and to make sure that they feel good about the certain risks that they're taking within the markets there. I think a lot of people were feeling really good about the market up until March, and we had a lot of uncertainty and a lot of volatility, and the market dropped about 38%, and that kind of shocked people into, okay, maybe investing in the market really isn't that easy, and maybe there's certain things that we need to take a look at. And so I think it's kind of this last 2 months has been a re-gauging kind of time of, hey, well, how much risk do I really want to take in the market as opposed to being aggressive or being conservative?
So should people be pulling their money out of the market and investing it elsewhere?
No, absolutely not.
Just thought I'd ask.
I like Mark, I have a small practice too, that but I know my clients very well. I can tell you out of the 380 households I manage, I had one knucklehead. And
I think everybody has one, at least one knucklehead.
But I had been talking to him for the whole month of March. He had been really nervous, and I had been helping him with concerns and about the market and trying to give him good advice. And just he was in great investments. It's just maybe he just felt that he was a little bit more aggressive than he should have been. And unfortunately, on March 23rd, he gave me a call and said, "Wyatt, I just can't sleep at night, and I need you to move everything into from stocks to bonds." And if you guys know what happened on March 23rd, that was the market low where the Dow Jones reached 18,000 18,000, and that was the low that we have seen so far since the Great Recession, since reaching the high of 29,500. And I recommended him to not do it and said, "This is not the time to do it." And he said, "No, I can't sleep at night. And when someone tells me that, I'm not here to create more health concerns in people's lives. I just want them to be able to feel good." And unfortunately, we made the poll, and he called me the next day and said, "I think I made a mistake," because the next day the market came back about 2,000 points that day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to ride the roller coaster.
Sometimes you do, but you also have to just really gauge how much risk are you really taking within the market, and how is it going to affect you, and how well is it going to perform. If the market goes down 38% and your portfolio only went down 18% during that same time, you're not taking the full brunt of the market pull down, and you don't have to recover as much when the market is recovering. Most of my clients, you know, are seeing about anywhere from being positive about 3% or being down about 4, 5, 6, or 7% right now. So depending on how conservative or how aggressive you are, you can see you'll be able to mitigate the risk through this turmoil. But being down within your portfolios right now is normal. If you're down 20% right now, you're taking the full brunt of exposure to the stock market, and you're not very well diversified within that. So.
Okay, can you quickly tell us what diversified means? When you say that, what are you explaining to the people?
So diversification means, I guess an easy way to put it is, when you invest your money, don't put all your money in one basket.
So don't buy just one stock.
Right, don't just go in and say, "Hey, I really like my Apple cell phone. I think Apple's a great company, and I'm going to put, you know, $20,000. That's my savings right now, and I'm going to put it all onto Apple." And, well, Apple being a good company, and it's very large and diversified within the technology world, you're putting all your money into one company, whereas you can spread that money out into, you know, even if you were to spread it into five different companies, you're diversifying your portfolio. And you don't have to be just in the stock market. You can be in the bond market, which has a zero correlation with the stock market. Or you can be invested in internationally versus domestically, and basically creating multiple baskets and multiple places to be taking advantage, because different markets and different investments will react differently to
situations like the COVID-19.
I think what we've seen recently, international markets have been hurt hard. In March, we had a really interesting situation where bonds were struggling a little bit, which are supposed to be very conservative investments as opposed to the stock market. This is going to be a very interesting thing to see and to kind of study for years to come. It's very different.
It will have its mark in history, that's for sure.
Yep.
I want to talk about charitable contributions. I know there's some new rules regarding that. Mark, tell us what we need to know.
So Congress has given us a gift.
Yay.
And, yeah, thanks, guys. The last time we had a gift like this would have been during the housing crisis about 10 years ago. And back then we were allowed to add real estate taxes paid to our standard deduction. So at the time that worked out fantastic for me. Our mortgage interest was super low and it didn't help me from a tax perspective. So being able to add those real estate taxes in saved me some money. They've done the same thing in 2020 with charitable contributions, and they've set a limit of $300. So if you do not itemize your deductions next year when you're filing your 2020 taxes, you have the ability to add $300 of charitable contributions directly to your standard deduction and save, you know, what, $300 times your tax rate is not going to be much, but hey, if you save 30 or 50 bucks in taxes, that's fantastic.
Better than a sharp stick in the eye.
Yeah, so everybody should jump on the internet right now, and they can head right over to lawmatters1030.org, and there's a donate button in the upper right corner. And if you donate up to $300, you can deduct that on your taxes next year without having to itemize.
That's
now,
awesome.
Now, if you still itemize, the charitable contributions just become part of your itemized deduction. So for my clients that are still going to itemize, it doesn't change that much for them. This is just for people that don't generally itemize, which is about 90% of the population right now. So 90% of the people out there have an opportunity to make a contribution, whether it's to the radio show or to a COVID-related cause or to the community food bank.
And I want you to be careful about these COVID causes because they've been popping up all over the place.
Yes.
And if you do due diligence, you're going to find out that not all of them are a bona fide, realistic 501c3, and you're just giving your money to some shyster out there.
Yes, you should always double check.
Triple
when
check.
You are making charitable contributions, personally, my advice is to always start locally.
Yes.
Start looking at your local community, at organizations that have been around for years, that are servicing the community that you live in, and they're the ones that are helping your friends and your neighbors in a time of need.
Yes, absolutely. So if you itemize, instead of giving just $300 to lawmatters1030.org, you can give more money.
You can give whatever you like. You could do up to 100% of your income for this year.
That would be awesome, Mark. Are you contributing?
Well, normally, you can only donate and deduct 50% of your adjusted gross income. For 2020, that has been lifted, and you can deduct contributions all the way up to your adjusted gross income. We've never had that happen. I doubt next year that I will have anybody that contributes 100% of their adjusted gross income to charity, but I'm waiting. I'm challenging them. Somebody prove me wrong. Do it.
Do
I want to see it.
Make it happen. That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate both of you coming on and clearing the air on some of these situations, and I hope people feel a little bit better about the fact that, you know what, It's not the end of the world. We're going to get through this, both health-wise and financially. Everybody's going to be fine. That's my prediction. What do you guys say?
I say, you know, this whole COVID-19 crisis is different, but we've been through these markets before, and we will recover. And I think we want to recover quicker than what it's actually going to happen, but it will happen, and you can be optimistic.
What about you, Mark? Are you optimistic?
I think that from a tax perspective, people should consult with their tax advisor and make sure that they're in the best position to take advantage of the things that are out there. Maybe look at their 401k contributions to see if they can get their income adjusted down to qualify for a stimulus payment next year if they don't. And I think this is an important time to remind people that the reason that you're supposed to have an emergency fund, mm-hmm. the reason you should have cash on hand is because something like this can happen at any time. And
what's the standard when you think emergency fund? How many months of emergency funds do people recommend?
For me personally, I think the first thing you have to do is you have to look at what your bills are. And I've heard all kinds of different things and, 6 months of income, but really you need to look at what your bills are. If you make $100,000 a year, but your bills are only $40,000 a year, and you're saving the rest of that, you don't necessarily need to have 6 months of the $100,000 saved. So I would be looking at 4 to 6 months, depending on your job and the likelihood of something happening. And it should be based on the actual outgoing cash on a monthly basis.
Okay. All right. Good advice. I want to thank both of you for coming on, and I hope you have a great time. If you go out hiking, take a lot of water with you, dress appropriately, wear bright colored clothes, and kind of know what your latitude and what is it, longitude and latitude is, so they can come rescue you quickly.
I will do.
Okay. You have a good day. On the phone, we have Craig. I've been a guest on the show before. Craig, can you hear me? No, he can't hear me?
Sounding on your end.
Hello.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And you?
I'm doing okay. You've got some exciting news to announce.
I do. Yesterday, we launched the documentary that we've been filming for 3 years, Contraland, and it is an expose alert piece on child trafficking, how it works, how big and pervasive it is, and how we can defend our children from it. So it's a passion project. The quality of the documentary is very high. We're proud of it, and we're grateful for everyone's assistance in getting it together and all of our allied law enforcement units working with us. And it's a beautiful effort against a very ugly, ugly crime spree.
It is, and you were nice enough to send it to me, and I actually was riveted. And it's jaw-dropping, it's heartbreaking, and it's something people need to know. People don't understand. This is a big, big problem in America.
Yes, ma'am. It's the fastest growing criminal enterprise on earth, and they estimate it now at between $38 and $50 billion a year in the United States just selling children. So it's a giant threat, and it is absolutely destroying the future of our country. So this is something that we do have to know about and face in order to stop the ravage, the damage that's happening to our children and the future of our nation. It's ripping us apart by the seams. And the problem is it's being kept so very quiet. And I decided to film Contraland specifically to rip away that veil of secrecy, to take that benefit from the child traffickers and from that criminal enterprise and make it almost impossible for them to continue in the future.
And when people watch this and they see the type of people who are involved, it's jaw-dropping. You can't believe. These are people that you would normally, you grow up and you're told you have to respect these people, they're of authority and blah, blah, blah. And here they are, sex trafficking.
Yeah, you really can't pick a child predator out of a lineup just by visual appearance alone. It's very disturbing. Evil can find itself in the heart of any human. And I decided to film a documentary to show the people what they really can't bring themselves to believe if you just tell them. Yeah. So we could tell people this, and they may feel, oh, we're probably pretty truthful. But when you show them, when you bring cameras into the real-world situation, you show them how many predators will come, how quickly, how readily, then it allows the viewer to understand, wow, okay, this is not something we can look away from and be okay anymore.
It's something we need to stop. And we sent a draft of a proposed bill to Congressman DeGrazia. I still haven't heard from him. That was sent to him over a week ago. And I know Veterans for Child Rescue is backing this bill. Law Matters is backing this bill. I know I've got from the Sheriff's Department, everybody we've talked to, they're backing this bill. And I was told that Congressman DeGrazio would help do the final draft of this bill, but I haven't heard from him yet. So if anybody out there knows him, give him a call. Tell him to call us. We need to get this going. This is important.
There you go. We got to fight on all fronts, right?
How can people get to, I know, right? How can people get to this movie so they can watch it?
ContralandMovie.com.
It's all one word, ContralandMovie.com. And everybody, and spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell everybody to watch this movie. And it's only, it's like an hour and a half, maybe. How long is this movie?
It's about, just shy of 100 minutes.
Okay, so, you know, it's something everybody needs to know. It's
so
scary.
Knowledge is power. We cannot fight a threat that we don't know. If I had cancer and you were my doctor, I would want for you to tell me. It may not be pleasant news, but I would need to understand that there's a problem, a life-threatening problem, so that I could begin defending myself against it. And,
yes.
It's no different with child trafficking, ravaging our children and the future of our nation.
Very true. And you know, I, not to get off on a side note, but when I was thinking about this, and I interviewed somebody a couple of months ago about contract law, and I thought, okay, these people are photographing children, and even if they're not underage, they're photographing people, putting this stuff on the internet. There's employment law that I think should apply. I mean, there's so many different facets to this where if you can't get them one way, you can get them another way. You know, they're not paying taxes. There's a huge situation. So,
the bottom line is if we have the ethic to defend the children, we'll realize the things that are wrong and harmful, and we will make the proper changes. We need to hold people to account. That's my opinion, is we are starved for justice in this nation. And it's not the ground level law enforcement officer that's at fault. It's the weak politicians and weak judges that let predators loose or will not put them away in the first place. And it allows bad people to ruin everything that we care about. And I'm big on putting a stop to those who are ruining this entire world for us all. I think with a lack of enforcement, then bad people just run amok and they destroy everything. And it's not caring and it's not kind to leave them loose. It's reckless. It's nonfeasance is what it is. And it's negligence. And we need to get back to putting away the harmful predators and holding people to account for their behavior.
And what this bill is to address is, several months ago I did a show with TPD and the attorney from I Am Jane Doe, Eric Bauer. And what they were describing was a lot of these sites appear to be from foreign countries like China or the UK, but actually they're right here. So they've figured out how to pretend to be someplace else to avoid being stopped or captured, when actually they're right here. So I said, well, why don't you just shut down their website? And they said, we don't have the authority to do that. We have the capability. We don't have the authority. So this bill is supposed to give all law enforcement the ability and the authority to shut down these websites.
Well, it's needed. And I'm huge on the First Amendment freedom of speech. We should be able to say whatever we feel.
As long as it's legal.
But that does not allow for predators. And I think, man, when you're going to set up a website to prey upon the innocent children who can't defend themselves, you need to be targeted and taken down. So that's just where I stand on that. And I believe most decent people, you know, instinctively believe that way.
And, you know, I had somebody say, what about freedom of speech? And I'm like, you know what, if they feel that they have a right to sex traffic in America, let them come and stand in front of our judge in our courtroom and explain to our judge why they should be allowed to sex traffic in America.
There you go. And let's hope it's a good judge.
Not the guy from Illinois. Let's talk a little bit about bite suits and this fundraiser we're trying to do. We launched a fundraiser. Law Matters launched a fundraiser just before everything shut down. So obviously we're struggling.
Well, it's a topic that hits close to me. A lot of my closest friends are longtime canine handlers, and I'm not a canine handler nor an expert, but I've been around them quite a bit, and I've heard all the stories, and we've worked with bomb dogs over in Iraq and my unit, and it's just something that I'm a dog lover to begin with, but I realized that a highly trained dog, a canine unit, is a really, really valuable asset, and not everybody understands just how powerful and beautiful that arrangement is. But man, if you see the funerals and whenever a canine unit, whenever a dog is killed in the line of action, they treat him like a fallen officer because that's the path that they operate in, and that's the value that they bring. So it's really cool. So I just want to say a few things that I've learned about it, and we've used them in our vets for child rescue operations, taking down child predators. And, the different law enforcement units that we work with have them, and they bring that. So in each of our operations, there have been canine units involved. And training is key, just like anything else. A firearm is no good to you if you don't know how to use it, nor a vehicle or anything else, right? They're just tools. Well, a dog could just be a pet unless you really train it properly so that the dog is a working, problem-solving team member. And that's what the canine training is designed to do. And the decoy that wears the suit has a decision. It depends on how well-trained the decoy is. If a highly trained decoy is going to want a more realistic and a lower profile suit that gives him greater agility to interact with the dog in a more sophisticated and realistic way. Whereas a beginning bite suit is going to be a very thick and big and bulky suit for maximum protection of the decoy.
30 seconds.
Okay. But a lighter agile suit is needed. So when an old suit starts to wear out, the decoy is in danger of being penetrated, and a dog is actually in danger of a shear, getting his tooth ripped out due to holes in the suit. So a new suit is very important to the unit, so we want to support that.
So I'm hoping everybody go to lawmatters1030.org, and the donation button is there if you would help us help our canine unit do some safe training. That would be awesome. And until next week, shop local, stay safe, and thank you, Greg.
Thank you. Take care.